History through the eyes of those who lived it. This is Hometown Heroes, presented on the air and online by Provident Payments, proudly honoring the men and women whose service and sacrifice have secured our freedom. Now, the host of Hometown Heroes, Paul Leffler.
Welcome to another edition of Hometown Heroes, the program that reminds you no matter where you live in this great country of ours, no matter how big or how small your hometown might be, there are stories there that should not go untold. What we've learned is they don't have to go untold as long as we're willing to ask a few questions and be patient enough to listen. Usually, we're talking to World War II veterans who were serving 8 decades ago, but this week, it's a 21st century edition with men who are currently serving in our armed forces and who earned the Distinguished Flying Cross for efforts not overseas, but in the wildfire smoke-saturated skies over California. Our goal is always the same, to honor our veterans for their service and sacrifice, to preserve their stories so we never forget the price that's been paid for our freedom. And in that process, we're both educated and entertained. And so often, we're inspired when we hear firsthand accounts of the kinds of situations the vast majority of us will never find ourselves in. 3 years ago, in Sacramento, California, the President of the United States shared these remarks.
Today, it's my profound honor to award 7 extraordinary soldiers with the Distinguished Flying Cross for their remarkable courage to rescue their fellow citizens. Welcome to Chief Warrant Officers Joseph Rosamond, Kip Godding, Irvin Hernandez, Brady Labine, G. Jung, and Sergeants George Escoval and Cameron Powell. Thank you very much, and I will say that it's such an honor to be in your presence. You'll hear a story shortly that was very inspiring to me and to everybody else, and that's why these are very important medals. Just over 1 week ago, these brave pilots and crew members of the California Army National Guard embarked on a harrowing mission. As the sun set on September 5th, they boarded 2 helicopters that are behind me. Then they flew into blazing flames, raging wind, and it was raging, and blinding smoke to rescue families who were trapped by the massive creek fire at the Mammoth Pool campground. While they were on their way to the campground, the crew received word from state and local officials and headquarters that it was far too dangerous to continue the mission, turn back. But they decided to continue anyway, knowing they might not return. They knew that people were in danger, great danger. As night set in, they could see almost nothing through the miles of dense smoke. Using their night goggles and their expert navigation skill, they reached the camp. They found the stranded families, many of whom were badly burned and injured, and they loaded them, as many as they could, onto the 2 helicopters. Then they made the perilous flight back to the base. As soon as they unloaded the passengers, they again risked their lives and flew back into the blazing fire to rescue more victims. Their superior said, "You cannot do this. You cannot do it again." They did it. The smoke had become even more overpowering, yet they returned a third time. After 10 grueling hours, they completed their mission, having saved the lives of an astounding 242 people. We are proud of them.
There's a lot to be proud of, and today we get to meet them, 3 of those 7 members of the California National Guard who were awarded the Distinguished Flying Cross. We'll also hear from one of the people they rescued in the wake of a reunion 3 years in the making that just took place this month at a Fresno State Bulldog football game. Let's begin with G. Jung, at the time a flight engineer, but now a Black Hawk helicopter pilot with the 1106th TASM-G, covering the entire western United States from its base in Fresno, California.
I'm from Fresno. I was actually born in Thailand, but my family immigrated here in 88. And so we were imported here from San Francisco, and this is where I grew up in Fresno my whole life.
And what made you want to join the service?
So I joined the service out of high school, you know, like most high schoolers. I didn't know what I wanted to do for my career, and the military seemed like a great thing to do at the time, and I joined. And while I served over the course of 18 years, you know, I really developed appreciation and patriotism, being able to help out the communities that I live with. And that really makes me proud and happy that I'm able to help people out.
And what do you remember about September 2020, flying into that scene? Can you describe what it look like and what you were seeing, feeling, experiencing?
Yeah, so what really resonated with me that night, I think the best way I can describe it is kind of like a scene in Dante's Inferno, you know, the gates of hell almost, where we put down our goggles and all you could see was flames and smoke. That's the best way I can describe it. Visibility was about a quarter mile, more or less in certain areas. But the fire actually really helped us out, you know, help us navigate the terrain because it really lit up. That's how we were able to get to the families and help them out.
Were there any moments in that long night where you wondered if you guys were going to be able to really do what you were trying to do?
Rescue missions, I've done all kinds of different missions, but every time we do a mission, risk mitigation always a big factor, you know. Is this going to endanger the crew? But we always do our best we can to try to help people out, and if it's worth it and we think we can do it, we're going to take the risk and go up there and get people out.
And, you know, you just said you've done all kinds of missions, and maybe you can give us some perspective on how this compares to other things you've done. Like, you've been in 18 years, you've been deployed overseas, I'm guessing?
Yes, that's correct. Been in 18 years, been deployed. It's a different kind of feeling, deployment versus, stateside. But stateside, you know, we do SAR missions. We do a lot of firefighting with CAL FIRE, and that really brings in the experience, being able to, you know, go out there and help fight fires. And that brings in comfortability for us when we attempted to go in and rescue the folks that were trapped. Having that experience from CAL FIRE, navigating the terrain and the smoke, and all that experience really combined to help us. Deployments are experiences a little bit different. I mean, you have people shooting at you, but here in the States, the mission set is different. Actually, the experience I've gained from CAL FIRE, fighting fires with the department, definitely helped us as a crew completely, contributed to the success of this mission here. The skills, the strategies, the techniques, what to look for, definitely contributed to the success of this search and rescue mission.
The last 3 years, have you ever wondered what happened to those people?
Yeah, I definitely do. What really resonates with me is are the children. I have kids myself, and I always wonder, you know, how they're doing. And I'm actually happy to see some of them. They're a lot bigger, and even some of the adults have gone to have their own children. And I'm really happy. I'm glad we were able to make an impact and help these families out, and so they can have a future.
Is there something that one of them said to you that really made an impression on you?
It got really emotional with one of the survivors. You know, he came up to me and he said, "Yeah, I remember you," and I'm happy and so thankful that you're able to help us out, and I have my own family now, and that really. That really sticks with me because, you know, I have my own family too, and if I was in the same situation, I'd be just as grateful. That really makes me happy that I'm able to help somebody out.
I didn't ask you this. What did it feel like to have the President of the United States give you the Distinguished Flying Cross personally?
You know what? Even till today, it feels unreal, you know, surreal. When I heard about it, you know, I was like, no, it can't be, you know. But, you know, there I was standing next to the President of the United States and shaking his hand, receiving the Distinguished Flying Cross. And I'm really glad. That's a great opportunity, once-in-a-lifetime opportunity in my life. I don't think I'll ever meet the President again, but who knows?
You never know. Yeah. You're still serving. And the Creek Fire experience, that rescue, is that part of what made you want to become a pilot?
I was already in the process of starting my packet. I'd already gone to walk school. And so I actually came back as an officer, warrant officer, and I was just on a little mini break before I started my pilot training. And so it happens that I got the call in between that time frame. I was an actual technician, so still I could perform my duties, and I, you know, answered the call and performed my duties, and I was able to help out people.
And if this one's not relevant, you know, tell me. But I'm just thinking, I've met a lot of Hmong veterans from the secret war in Laos, whose service has never really been recognized by our country. They don't get veteran status, yet they risk their lives the same way Americans did. Knowing that the generation before you was dealing with that, to get that DFC from the president, did that give it some context? Do you notice that contrast?
Yes, definitely made a great impact in the community. I just want to kind of go back to a story. My wife's grandpa was a soldier in the Secret War, and his job was actually to go out there and rescue downed American pilots in very dangerous situations. Being a second, third generation myself, the community really showed a lot of support, and I think it inspired a lot of young folks to join the military and do the same for the country.
Well, let's end there. If there's a young person, you know, maybe getting ready to finish high school, and someone said, hey, you ought to join the military. You can maybe even serve in your hometown with the 1106 TASMG. What advice would you give them?
You know, joining the military brings many opportunities, you know, especially coming from a background of poverty. You know, it opens a lot of doors. You know, education, the military definitely opens a lot of avenues for you to become successful and build those necessary skills to become successful in life. So I definitely recommend it, and, you know, go to school.
Again, that was Ji Zhang, one of the men awarded the Distinguished Flying Cross for their role in rescuing more than 250 people during a wildfire in Central California 3 years ago. Time to meet another one, Irvin Hernandez, who grew up in a farming family in Parlier, California, and joined the National Guard after high school.
I joined as a 15 Papaw Flight Operations Specialist. I did that for a couple months. Didn't really vibe with me. I wanted to do a little bit more, and I was able to reclass as a 15 Golf, which is a sheet metal mechanic, so working on all the airframes, doing all the structural job of that. And after being here for 2 or 3 years around the aircraft, the idea is like, why don't I fly them? I enjoy them. It wasn't something my younger self would have realized that I could possibly do, but being in the Guard brought that opportunity to me. So I pursued it.
And I'm just guessing that's not all that common, that trajectory to come in at the bottom of the totem pole and make it up into that cockpit.
No, it's actually a pretty strenuous path to get there. A lot of people don't know that you can move that way. Similar to me, maybe it's not even in like an idea that crosses their mind. And for the general population, going from high school or off the streets, they aren't aware of the avenues to get to that position.
And have they sent you overseas?
Yes, I deployed in 2016 as a sheet metal mechanic. Went over there, I was in Kuwait, and I spent a little bit of time in Afghanistan. I had a great time, considering all. I had a great group of people that went, and which made that experience a lot more bearable.
What was the hardest part of that? Because most of us never experienced that. We're so used to this constantly connected world where we have our phone and we can text and call and see anybody anytime. What was the most challenging element of your being on the other side of the world?
Just being away from family and friends and knowing that their lives are kind of going on and you're kind of over there. Everything's still a bit of a standstill for you. So that was the hardest thing. But again, the people that I went with, I made a lot of lifetime friends. I learned a lot while I was there, and that was really what made it a good deployment for myself.
Were you ever in situations there where you felt you were in danger?
Well, when I was in Afghanistan, there's actually a bombing on the base. I remember the base was shut down. It was a little chaotic before we were able to secure the base and get a hold of everybody because the communications were down. So, yeah, that was one of the highlights of that deployment.
Highlights or boy, I don't want that to ever happen again.
Yeah, I don't want that to happen again. Definitely a memorable thing, and give that to somebody. Just you think you might go to Kuwait, but you can go to, which is not like a combat zone, but from that place you can be sent to other areas that are, specifically the unit we deployed with, the 1106 TASMG. We had a lot of teams that would go out to different areas to help with maintenance. That is a possibility, and you got to be aware of that before you sign up and be aware of that when you deploy.
And what's it feel like to fly one of those things?
One of the best feelings I've ever had. Every time I go fly, whether it's been a stressful day or whether I have, when I go fly, everything kind of just melts away. I'm enjoying it. The views are amazing every day. When we shut down, you kind of take a step back and like, wow, this is what I'm getting paid to do.
So how long had you been a pilot when this Creek Fire situation arose?
I had been a pilot a little over a year. So it was a relatively new pilot, definitely. One for the books, very learned a lot from there, from Mr. Godding. He's a very experienced pilot. I had actually just come off of a different mission. I had just arrived that Friday, and that Saturday morning, I looked down at my phone, saw the text, and before I finished reading the text, I'm already walking in trying to get my clothes. I was living in Merced at the time, so I had a little bit of ways to even get to Fresno. I responded and said, I'll be there as soon as I can, but if somebody can get there prior to me, then they can go. We got here, we were set up for the aircraft, and then things just started coming in, like this information, we're getting grid points, and like, this is happening. At first, we weren't aware of the amount of people. So we were told there are some people, there's no specific number, They're in New Mexico's reservoir. Didn't exactly know what to expect. I've been on fires before. I know it can be a very treacherous situation with the smoke, and the winds can change any time. So with my limited experience, I try to fall back on that.
Did you think this was something you guys could actually pull off, that you could get in there and get all those people out?
Yes, as the day progressed and as we got closer and closer, I thought, yes, we can do it. We stress safety, and we also train a lot to be prepared for many different situations. In the aircraft, things can change immediately, and so we train for those type of situations. Once we got in there, and then going back with me relying on the experience of my Mr. Godding, we talked it out with as a crew. Are we comfortable? Can we continue? I was comfortable continuing on as the way we briefed little by little, and I thought we could be successful.
But you'd never flown in those kind of conditions before, right?
No, that is not a typical situation that we will be flying in. The most we typically do during the day, there is smoke around. We typically stay away from the smoke. Although we can still smell it, there's still some smoke that gets in. But in that specific situation, no, that's not typical. Well, my motivation was during when I heard there's people, what's the community? These are people that we will may or may not see, or we may know who they are. And there's families that, it could have been my family down there. And that's what I thought. Is like, I would, even if I didn't go personally, if my extended family, I would want to see them safely return. So just knowing that there's people that need help, and we're literally the last line. That was my motivation.
And we all know that your goal was to save their lives, but I think you guys are probably the only ones that really know how much you risked your own lives, because that's what you were doing, right? I mean, you were putting all of your lives on those helicopters at risk by going in those conditions, weren't you?
Yes, but that actually comes with the territory of being an Army aviator. We know when we enlisted and we decided to go pursue this path, deployments were going to happen. We're going to risk our lives. The job is inherently dangerous, as is just flying in a normal, beautiful, clear sky day. But with that in mind, it's just another day risking our lives. Not to the extent of this, but we were prepared for that.
It's time for our first break, but when this special edition of Hometown Heroes continues, that daring rescue through the eyes of both rescuer and rescuee. Go to hometownheroesradio.com for photos related to this incredible story, and we'll be right back after this.